Yeah.
Who was tried?
The leaders who were left. Most of them were dead, but...
Rockefeller had to admit it, that he didn't know it was so bad there, that he was misinformed. And he started the Rockefeller Foundation then to give money. Because Rockefeller's name was, all over the world, let alone was known. So he started the Rockefeller Foundation to give money to fighting his name. But his representatives came out, the state. There's a wonderful book published by the Labor Movement of Colorado that Pat Flawless used to have. If you can find a copy of it, about Ludlow. Well, people started out from Fort Scott after Ludlow armed. Radical farmers, and they started out just going towards Ludlow after after they heard about it. That's when the socialists sent me there. Someday I think all the files of the Appeals of Reason are at Pittsburgh, Kansas University. Somebody ought to make an anthology of that.
Do you have things published in there?
Mary Dell Wharton. N-A-R-I-D-E-L. That all burnt down a couple of years ago, but they had sent the papers to Pittsburgh.
Well, the Appeal to Reason burnt down. The building. You mean?
But Fred and those guys had gone there and got a truckload of little blue books before it burned down.
They were just sitting there.
Well, also, I think that Heritage, Upton Sinclair, wrote one of the great books in America about the stockyards, which caused us the whole nation to change and have laws about food. Jack London marched with the unemployed to Washington. Well, that's what made Jack London have that audience. Then there was a big audience before the First World War for working class literature.
How does Steinbeck fit into that?
Well, he came in because it became popular to write about people. And that woman, Day, her name was, she took him a bunch of manuscripts that high. I think Tilly Olson was part of that. They had interviewed all those people in the lettuce fields, and they wanted somebody to write a book about it. He never acknowledged that his material came from that. But it was popular then.
He didn't make it popular.
No, he can't. He thought he'd make a big hit, and he did. Even Hemingway wrote a people's book. I think it's one of his best books. Nobody ever mentions it.
What is that?
It's that one about the man and woman... The have and the have-nots, I think it's called.
To have and have not?
There's a wonderful thing about this fisherman, worker, and his wife. Yeah, everybody was in 1935 at the left Congress. Everybody was there, including Hemingway and Savoyan.
Thank you, all of those nice writers. And, they thought it was the revolution. They were going to get in on it.
Well, that is just now beginning to be brought up the radicalism of America before the First World War. There was more strikes and more organizations than ever been in America. Not only here, but in Germany.
Well, I thought one of the important things in the documentary about the Hollywood 10 was the how it halted the creativity in film. I mean, it did, and it points it out, because then we got all the beach party movies and the Dumbo dummy movies.
That's the aim of it.
And that all of the writers that you have encouraged, the people you know who are writers, and that you always encourage people to write. How do you think it affected your creativity? I mean, you wrote after the World War II. You wrote things about the war and about people coming back from the war, and have you ever written a story about somebody going through the McCarthy period?
No, I don't think so. I wrote a lot of journalistic things about it. During the CIO, I was even in, they had radical papers in the beginning. They started radical schools, and they also paid you. I was kind of a correspondent during the Depression from the Middle West. I was in the New Republic and the Nation and PN. They had that big paper. And they paid you some American Mercury, the Dial. I was in all those. They had a big reading public in the liberal and radical, and the masses. Of course, it would never have been published at all without them in the 20s, from the 20s on. You look at their. Downstairs, I was going to give those all away, and I started looking at them, the old masses and new masses. They were just remarkable. Fred Whitehead and some of them, they want to start something like that. You need something like that. Because it gave you a working class philosophical Marxist background, a class background. Well, like Steinbeck, how did, you know, where did he get all that in the Grapes of Wrath, the ending about organizing and all? It all came down from him. He knew, and afterwards he began to write trash. I don't think he wrote anything. His Travels with a Dog are awful, and his things about, he wrote one about Norwegian resistance that's terrible. He didn't write anything after that. And he wrote a romantic thing about Mexico. No, it affects it. It shows what that can do to culture. Painters, of course, you had the WPA along with it in the 30s. But you had that radical culture since 1915, when the old liberators started. The old liberators, marvelous to look at. You see all those painters and all of the, they became cubists. No, so, that whole period and the strength of the people's movements, you know, is not known by. It's wonderful how they can. Now this girl has a PhD, and she knows nothing about even the old traditions of democracy, of, you know, the revolution,
or the struggle of Jefferson, or the struggle to make a people. She doesn't know anything about that.
So when you write, you don't want to just tell the story of someone. You want to connect that to.
Well, of course, I believe that everybody is connected. I mean, I don't think anybody. Now I think it shows more than ever. You know what being in the writers, for example, their writing is just personal. I mean, even Bly, and you know, it's just about themselves, or milkweed, the loft is a very, and they had no nothing to say.
You mean when you say that, you mean they don't have a point of view, or they don't have an opinion, or what?
Well, they don't reflect any of the living struggles that go on. It's not a point of view. It's a matter of who you're struggling with and what for. I mean, Tolstoy and all of those writers had that same struggle. Were they going to write about the aristocracy? Tolstoy rewrote War and Peace entirely when he found out about the heroism of the peasant in the war. And he wrote, after he'd been writing on it 9 years, he wrote it into a social document because he saw that. Now more than ever, the culture can't come from the upper middle class or the middle class. But all that history it didn't start with the 30s. There was a tremendous culture before the First World War. That was when the left painters and protested against European culture.
Imperialist culture, they used to call it that. Well, it's all going to come back now because you don't have any choice now. You're either out for life or you're for death. I mean, there's no big middle ground where you can choose to come up the ladder and get some of the fruits.
But you could still write private, personal things. A writer could still do that.
I don't think anything private. Their privacy is because they're rotting. They're cut off. The arteries are tied off. There's plenty of private. The only real privacy you can have is in social writing. I mean, you write your real private feelings about the struggle or about people. I always wrote that. An annunciation is a private but public statement. But there's no disconnection, I don't think. I think annunciation is very personal and very social. All my writing, I think, is that way.
Well, what makes it social?
Well, the feeling is quite different than in, what's his name, most of our private culture or novels and so on are for the self only, the individual, the cut-off. Great writing novels come from feeling with others. I mean, you feel, why do you go to Nicaragua? Then you don't go there just for your private. You go there because of a social feeling of identity with. Like somebody said, I think that solidarity is a word that the middle class can't use. It has no meaning.
Why?
Because they have no solidarity.
Because they don't feel it, or because what?
They don't identify themselves with others. They wouldn't accept.
Because they're separate.
Privileged, elite, and separate, and the whole existential movement was that. How to be, and only Sartre tried to make it
how you could be social and be private. What you did made no difference, except to you. I mean, if you did anything social, it was only because of your own private necessity or something. You didn't ever do it because you thought you'd change anything or rescue anybody or help anybody or love anybody. I got to get that diary Simone de Beauvoir made in his last days, where he said he never could bear to touch anybody. But that's the acme of the final thing of isolation.
But I always thought that came out of his experience with fascism.
Sorry,
that was his reaction to his experience under fascism.
Well, he wasn't in any concentration camp or anything.
But his country was taken over by Hitler.
I know. He was in a room somewhere hiding.
He was part of the underground.
But was he?
Well, Yeah.
Well, you see, in the 30s, some of those people came out of their cocoons. They saw their class was dying. So they really came and tried to attach themselves to the working class. As I say, in 35, there they were, right there in that. But in 5 years more, they were being informers for the FBI.
Well, now, who are you talking about? Was Saroyan an informer?
Well, not directly, as I know, could prove it, but he went. He went with that class.
Was Hemingway?
Europe. Well, Hemingway shot himself because he couldn't.
Yeah, but that was a long. That was 20 years later.
That didn't make any difference. His father shot himself 40 years before that. I think Hemingway had a big struggle about writing. Hemingway's first book is a very social book. But he wanted to be a success. Hunting, hunt. You know, the culture before the First World War. That was a great culture of America. As in point of how many people read it.
Who? Read what?
Working class culture or democratic culture.
Who was writing it then?
Oh, there was even Dreiser. Sister Carrie was one of the first great social books about women. It was so great it was banned in 1910 or 11. And there was... all those liberal writers, not Noyes, I can't remember all their names. I can't remember any middle class writers that were great.
Many women who wrote, this comes from courses I've taken in the 1800s and the 1900s, wrote. And a lot of them are doing it now, too. These romance stories, they're kind of escapist stories.
I'm the only one.
Why do you think that was?
Because of their position, and nobody would publish any. Even in my time, in the 20s, you couldn't get anything published that didn't show the romantic mother-wife woman, or the pretty woman, or the... or a prostitute. Now,
but people like to read that.
That was their condition. All those women over there, you know, they wanted the romantic picture because they were oppressed women. When I was trying to write for the women's magazine, I stopped writing about women. I wrote about children because women hated my work in the 30s.
Why?
Many women.
What did they hate?
They hated to expose the oppressor for one thing. They defended their position and their husband. That's why you didn't. They didn't tell about rape, or they didn't tell about their oppression at home. And when I would go to interview them, they would never talk about their husband. They defended. They're oppressor. I always say women are the only oppressed people who defend their oppressor, and not only that, but sleep with him. That's another thing about Marion and about me also, was that for Marion to oppose that hierarchical oppression of the church, and the church was, you know, a woman was a breeding. You didn't even have an opinion. Like Mr. Wharton said, she started to read those books, and that was the end of it. But it's been such a... I saw a quote by Margaret Mead in the Sunday paper saying that people in our time have lived more change than any people in hundreds of years prior to it. in, you know, since 1900, those changes are so immense that the women today can't even imagine how it was to be completely under the dominance of the patriarchal society, even though they still feel it. But Marian had to break out of the religious belief, you know, and that was, she was raised in that, believe in hell, believe in the Redeemer, and Crown believed all that, and yet she knew what the world she lived in was terrible. Economically, she went through terrible
times, and she had nothing. I always wonder how in the hell she ever got a divorce. Because a woman could hardly ever, she got a divorce to protect her money. I don't know how she did. And probably he helped her, her husband. Because women couldn't get a divorce. They couldn't even, you couldn't even be found guilty for killing a woman in Texas. It was your right to kill a woman. It's like a cow or a... I mean, it has been so fast that it's very hard to... I mean, some of the feminists believe they began it. You had all the laws against you. Yeah, the sexual thing. I think that's what Grandma suffered under, probably. You know, you had to live with your husband. You were under his dominance no matter any time, no matter what. And get pregnant. I'm sure Grandma hated being pregnant. And whenever he returned, well, she had to sleep with him. And also, I think he was an alcoholic besides. That was very common also. Violence against women was accepted. If you can't beat your wife, who can you beat? But to even in your mind, you know, to go against that. Feminist Press is republishing some of those women who did publish, like Gilman, and shows how she goes insane in her marriage. And that black woman, Thorsten, I never remember her name, she was a black woman with Langston Hughes, who was, actually was kept alive by she and Langston were kept alive by a white patron. But now again, we need to develop that audience, you know,
for our literature. I mean, look at the little blue books, you know. God, Fred said in a letter yesterday that they showed you gotta have books that people can buy. That, you know, people bought those books and read those books and carried them. They probably raised the consciousness of a whole generation. But who can buy a $15 book or a children's book, $9.95? Nobody. There was a tremendous... Well, I think there was a tremendous people's culture from the beginning of the American Revolution. The concept of a people's culture and a people's press was unknown. There was a tremendous culture after the Civil War, for example, or before the Civil War. The Hokah Chief was started in 56.
What's the Hokah Chief?
One of the great cultural, it was an edited newspaper in Hoka, you know, that's down the river. It's a town down
the, in Minnesota?
It's across from La Crosse, in what is called the Alps, Minnesota Alps. Somebody, you know, that was read. That was a newspaper? And it was poetry. And it was Tom Paine in it. And it was democratic. It was about people's culture against the establishment, you know, against the, what they were in Europe.
And it was read all over, not only Minnesota. Minnesota didn't become a state till 58. But everybody wrote for it. There was a farmer
who had a trek around the community to write a column. Well, that whole column could just be printed in a book. You know, it was literature, like Whittier or Hawthorne. And that was true everywhere. You know, this was a democracy that came out of feudalism, free land. It was a tremendous upsurge of all kinds of culture. But that isn't early. Well, I try to show that in North Star Country.
How many of those people do you think who came out for the free land realized that it was someone else's land? Saw the contradiction?
No, even my grandmother thought it was, she knew it was Indian land, but she thought we were helping the Indian savages. We were Christianizing them, bringing in our Lord Jesus Christ. She knew that. In fact, I have a feeling that her father, from just little things that she said about him, and then I went to see his surveying things at the courthouse there, his signature. He went into a deep silence when the Trail of Tears went right by there, just south of Toulon. Went through there, and he. My grandmother had classes, you know, of the Indians to teach them not to drink. Drinking was her main.
But they didn't drink before the white man came.
No, I don't know, she probably didn't know that. But the majority of people in Perry were Indians, and they were drunk. Well, they were, you know, just in the process of taking their land away from them. And not only that, dissolving, they had a nation.
Yeah.
They had buildings and capital and press. But this had a lot to do with probably the women's movement now. Like, well, what's her name started, that was said to ignited the Civil War with her book. And of course, she wrote it against her husband's, with a baby inside and a rock in the cradle with her foot.
Who's this?
She wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Oh, Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Right.
Now, her.
Now, I guess that was published probably by the abolitionists who had money. You know, I don't think that was published. Anybody would have published it from a. Of course, she also came from the Beecher family. Beecher was one of the great abolitionist preachers. But all those feminists came from oppressive. Cat, what's her name? Cat. She had about 8 children. Susan B. Anthony never got married. You know that those pills are making
my muscles swell up. I never had that before. They're
making me have cramps. That's probably because maybe they breathe free the arteries or something. Last night, this muscle was all, it's swollen now, but it was, it must be that the pills have something to do with it. And urinate. I think that's the pills, too. Last night, I went every 10 minutes, I think, which is probably good. But I guess maybe getting some kind of poison out of it. But it doesn't clog up my head. It doesn't put me to sleep as much as the other.
Do you like that?
Yeah. But it doesn't stop the pain either.
But you don't have pain when you're sitting down or lying down?
I have these cramps lately since I've been taking the pills.
You probably need more calcium.
Well, I stopped taking calcium. I don't know. It didn't seem to be any... I took it for so
muscle long. Cramps. If you really need calcium if you're getting muscle cramps.
Well, I don't know in my condition whether that's true or not. And I can, every once in a while I feel the blood, my legs feel more alive. I can have a pain and the blood seems to coagulate and then let go free. And I'm just speaking of things I never had before. I don't know whether it's the pills or not.
What are you going to take on your trip?
I'm going to go back to the... I don't have something better. I can't go on most pills. If I can't take any extra...
Well, they don't kill the pain anyway.
Well, they do a little bit. I walk better, but I still have pain. But I can't straighten up.
You can't?
I can't.
I mean, it's slight, but it's very slight. He didn't take any pictures of my back.
They only went to the Cossacks and the hips. The hips are good, that's good.
Yeah.
So far. But across the middle of my back. But the x-rays didn't go there.
Well, maybe we should take them in the pictures you have.
Well, I have to get them in Mendota. But that was years ago.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. It's not going to be better.
Well, I don't know. He's supposed to do that. What do they do with those arthritic? They just tell you that it's hopeless. And give you pain.
He told you to have surgery.
But you could. He didn't say to have it.
Well, he said that would stop the pain.
It might. We said it was not always successful. He said that too.
Well, he said there have been a lot of people that had success with them.
Well, I know that already. But I wouldn't be able to afford it. It must cost thousands of dollars.
Well, Medicare would pay for that. You could afford it.
Well, I'd like to be in some way to show that struggle of women. And I don't think, a person like Marion. Well, look at Madge Hawkins. She went all those years, sent herself to school in that poor farm to be a teacher and to be a principal. She had to marry one. I think she never had any, he wasn't a very abrasive man. And she took care of him all, and cooked for him. But she never got to be, and then she wanted to write.
She never thought her writing was as good as she thought it was. But she's gonna, I wonder where her manuscript is. I have some of it. It's very good about her youth, and its
farm. And her sexual, she never understood anything about sex, ever. She, you know, just like a Puritan girl. She wouldn't read, what was that Norwegian writer that came out to Dakota and worked in the hay and wrote those great Hunger, Knut, Knutson, Knut, something, Canute. He lived in her town, and he went to brothels in her town, and he tells about it in his autobiography. And she said there wasn't any brothels in Fargo or Bismarck. And what do you mean it wasn't? But we wouldn't. They would have anything like that. And then when she was 90, she read Luther. And there she got this wonderful, marvelous. And now I found out who killed my sexual life. It's Martin Luther. That's another thing, those women that you looked at, you know, were served sexually. You don't get a body like that, you know, just easy. I often wanted somebody to tell me about the life of Mrs. Jensen. Garina, was that her name? What a, all those babies, all those children, and that lecherous Jensen. It was only very a long time before the girls told about Jensen's incest with all of his daughters. I mean, see, they protected him.
I was worried about Deborah. I said to Anna, why don't you get up and say on Christmas your father tried to sleep with you? She said, should I? I said, see, he was an atheist. Get up and tell him that. Well, that's another thing that was part of our culture, not to tell anything. Especially with women, I mean, they weren't going to tell about the... Like Grandma said, you're going to... Now, after we kept all this a secret, you're going to tell it now? She never told anything. Did I tell you about this wonderful guy from Lucas, Iowa? This wonderful book, These Ruined People. I got a wonderful letter from him saying, I know it's in myself, he says. I had another book that the bookstore sent me, a wonderful worker who tells this whole story. He got a grant. It's a wonderful story of tools, and he worked at everything. He was kind of a semi-skilled worker. And yet it's told like a hilarious entertainment, you know, for the, he got the prize, you know, for some kind of rural, but he never protests anything, he never gets mad at anything, he never tells, you know, just tells this wonderful, wonderful adventure that he had that he's going to tell you about. And this whole town of Lucas, I spent a week there with Dorothy. What was the Driftmeyer's name, the family?
Field.
God, Rachel, how can you do that?
It's my job.
I could not think of their name. I could think of Driftmeyer, and that was Lucille's father's name. But the Fields, I wanted this guy to go and investigate the Fields, who started out as great Democrats, you know, great American frontier Democrats, family. And ended up by being plutocratic bosses of the worst kind, exploiters of labor, and like Lucille was. But you see, that wasn't them. That was a development of capitalism. I mean, they could hardly help but not do that. It was just the two sisters, Jessie. She was a partner with Scott Nearing to start the 4-H clubs, to keep the democratic feeling alive. You ever see her book?
Mm-hmm.
I have a book of it. And she had it to her death. I went with this, took her out in the country. It was the most fantastic journey I ever took.
you know, where she remembered all the, and she remembered, and there was a, the miners, there was a mining company there. And she began to cry. Remember this, she went amongst them as a charity woman from the Field family. They all had some kind of, was it smallpox or some kind of disease that went through the mining camp. And she went there to help him. And this dying man on a cot rose up and said, "Get out of my house. Get out of my door. Don't come near me. You are the owner. You are the mine owners. You are the, you drove us to death." And this is just a few days before her death. She remembered this whole, said she never recovered from that man rising up in them. But she never left the feeling that she had for the people. And then, of course, they started the radio thing in 1928. That was, what was the mother's name? Miama. And that was a democratic, great voice of the farm women. And, you know, it just became a gimmick. Well, she always tried to keep it that. She was broadcasting up until the end of her life. What a story that is, that family. Some of the families still own the seed company. That awful Lucille sitting there won't say a word. Lucille could have been a great writer.
She sure tells stories well.
I have a lot of her letters.
Yeah.
I discovered. Well, she was in the best short stories of the year on the O'Brien collection. She only written about two stories. She has that book, though, in her library. Well, of course, to have your leg taken off at her age was. There she is, still sitting there with one leg. Now she doesn't have any leg. Well, I also now have a lot of feelings about what all that did to me as a woman, as a person, as a writer. I mean, you know, it's like having secret emanations of atomic infiltration, or Rodan, Redon,
it permeates your walls and enters you without you knowing it until you have cancer. Sometimes I feel right now, you know, some of those permeations of those kind of oppressions, you know, what you could have written if you didn't have them.
I didn't write anything that I intended to write. And, of course, the economic struggle. But also the psychic struggle of being inferior, of being... Well, Marion never got over that. That's what made her so raucous. Because she never got up before the Saturday Lunch Club that she didn't feel. And, of course, they made her feel that way. But now it all comes back to me. You know, what I could, what I didn't write, what I could have written, and how I was boondoggled by also, you know, how you get certain beliefs or you get certain, and they're read on and it permeates you from the walls. Or like Marion had, you know, like racism, you know, that permeated into her from the time and the village and her family and the Indians. And she was, you know, a terrible racist, so she gave her life. Freedom from people. Well, that's poison, and a poison of depression and melancholy and feeling put upon, oppressed by an outside power. I don't think I ever write anything I don't feel that. When I wrote in the 27 about when I began to write about women, well, I received rebuffs for my work from the male world, and I never sent anything into a magazine that had anything but a male editor until the Feminist Press. I never had once during the Dial, Marion Monroe was editor of the Dial, and Amos Gregory, two women were editor of the Dial when they published my work in the Dial. But that was a fluke. I mean, you know, that was privately owned by a big money, and it was fashionable. They were fashionable poets and women writers. But sometimes I have a feeling, what you could have become if you didn't have all of those.
What would you have become?
I would have become a good writer. I would have had, freedom. Of course, time was a lot to do with that, but that was part of it also, economic. Until I got the grant, I never had enough money to write on.
What's wrong with your writing? What would you make it better? How would you make it better?
Well, it isn't enough, for one thing, and it's not sharp.
But sharp?
But it's it's like having one leg, like Lucille. Amputations. I didn't write very much. When I see what I wrote under the circumstances, I'm amazed. But I didn't write a big novel. I started them. My files are full. There's three novels in my file, but I never could finish them. It was like being a Hiroshima. Victim, something entered you that permeated your whole being, entered everybody. I mean, what causes people like, the two brothers who became head of the automobile workers? I saw the other brother on TV.
Reuther.
Now, Reuther was a worker, heroic. He was permeated by the radon of an upper class and became a sellout. And that's understandable. I mean, it's like, losing your skin from the Hiroshima fallout. And it's very powerful in our society. That's why I think we should have a big bonfire or somebody like Clarence Sharp.
Alma called and says he's better.
Yeah, I heard you. I wrote him a letter saying,
poor death is not going to be able to take you. But he's 96 or something, And if you want to go,
go.
Did he answer you?
No, I don't know why. He can't probably write.
How did you hear he was better?
Twiney.
Oh, she wrote you?
I guess so. I don't know the way I have it. Well, they had that party for Helen Cruz.
Guess it was. And you didn't go?
Well, they didn't offer to take me. I sent them some money.
Mm. How was it?
I don't know. Mm. I didn't hear it. But I think she's 80.
Oh, you should have gone. Didn't you want to go?
Yeah, but I don't know how to get.
I would have taken you.
Oh, you were busy.
I would take you.
Oh, I know you would. I said that to Martha Ralph, for example, about Alice Neal. I said, didn't you have a struggle of whether you should write? She really wants to. She does write. She got two things this year, two grants, two prizes, I think they were. And she just turned white. She is white. And she said, yes, I chose marriage. And I was afraid not to. Now there's a, you know, really a point. So when Marion came to that, and she was 20, Grandma was impoverished. Probably was losing her farm in Murray. Mac was living off of her farm. He was her only helper. I suppose there was, you know, I think Daisy was a baby, probably. Sure, that
teenager.
Was after, Bedford. Teenager. And they were impoverished. And she did lose that. And then she lost that house, apparently, right after I was born, sometime or other. So she either had to get a job, which was very dim then to get a job. That was before women went into offices. There was no job except marriage, nurse, teacher, or whore. That was your choice. So she married Mr. Morton. I don't suppose she... Well, he was handsome and sexual, and I don't know what her sexual needs were, but she was handsome also and sexual. But, you know, she didn't know anything about having children. He told you that story about it in Boise where she said she didn't feel well. And the women took her outside the room and said, don't talk about that. You know, don't you know you're pregnant? Not pregnant. They wouldn't say pregnant. What would they say? With child.
You're going to have a baby.
Yeah. And she was horrified. So there she was. But she didn't have any choice. Grandma must have gone through a terrible... I heard when I went to Des Moines, I never knew that, and she was a cook in a sorority in Des Moines to send Mary, wanted to send Mary into school. She was a cook. So, she, you know, she lost all of... She must have left Illinois. She lost that farm. But then Mark Lucy was still there at Murray.
I didn't know that, but I heard that from that old farmer who came to see me. I let him die without taking down his life. He got on a... He hitched a ride on the train and came here to Shenandoah to see me because of Grandma.
And then Mark Russi told me about Mark. I didn't know Mark Russi was there then. He must have died. I thought he died in 1898 or something. But he had tremendous memories of him. He was a drunk and as a short man. I always thought he was not a short man, but he remembered him as this drunk, short, short man. You remember Mr. Wharton? That man, I should have captured him in his life. He came to Shenandoah, but nobody asked him to spend the night. The train didn't stop in Murray unless you flagged it. And he lived with his mother and father all of his life. He and his brother never married. They lived there and ran the farm. A wonderful old man. And then you didn't... When did you choose to be a writer? They ask you. I don't think I am a writer. I never chose it, and I never thought of myself as, you know, a writer like Bly they're writers writing for certain reasons, a certain... You know, to be writers, to be known writers. I never had that. The known writers I knew wrote for the People to Reason and the Little Blue Books. And the People to Read, the Alderman Julius and were able to hire writers, you know, have 12 or 14 writers on there.
The phone's ringing.